It is 23 and a half minutes after the hour on a Winsome Wednesday. Doug Greenwald joins us live and direct. Well, I guess this is direct from Columbia, Maryland. Technically, he's talking to us. We can see him. We're using Skype to talk with Doug. So it's technology that brings him to us. Is that, are we hearing from you directly? I think we are.
Well, I am, but I'm puzzled over your characterization, live and direct.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what, that's the alternative here, dead and indirect?
Well, no, the alternative, see, would be a recorded program because, see, you've been recuperating. I remind you that you've been recuperating for a year. And so, and Wednesday morning, there are people that expect to hear your voice here. And so we've been playing contextual classics every Wednesday. Well, that is older programs from 2016, 2017. And I must say, you wear well, Doug.
Well, my blessings to the remnant who keeps hanging on.
No, we're talking about the remnant. And you addressed that at the last conference, as a matter of fact, the remnant.
You said,
we are the remnant. Explain to us. Well, first of all, let me introduce Doug. He's the senior teaching fellow, for those of you maybe not acquainted with Doug. Senior teaching fellow at Preserving Bible Times, which is a ministry that's now 17, 18 years old. They're based in Columbia, Maryland. And we're going to be talking about the upcoming conference, the third annual Institute of Biblical Context conference coming up in Michigan. Last conference, Doug, you addressed the group as the remnant. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, and I think my phrase was, this is a reunion of the remnant.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Well, the remnant are those people who truly care about biblical context, because the vast majority of the people in Western evangelicalism don't even realize it matters.
Well, they would if they tune in now and then, because I can't think of a more exciting, in my own personal Christian walk here, I can't think, other than the salvation experience itself, the commitment to Jesus as Lord, I can't think of any other spike in my interest, in my passion for this thing, than discovering biblical context.
I know, and it's just a world of difference. You know, any poll you read, Christians are reading the Bible less, and in the aggregate, it's kind of a ho-hum experience. And I think the difference is, and I've used this particular example before, you get sort of blasé about water skiing across the surface of the Scriptures. It's just wish somebody would say, hey, let's go snorkeling below the surface here and discover a whole new world. And those people who have gone to Israel or read some of the ever-growing population of books about biblical context that are out there in the marketplace suddenly have let's go below the surface experience and realize there's a whole new world down here. And the difference is the excitement, the energy, the sense of adventure, this notion that you're Indiana Jones of the Scriptures, and every day you're venturing forth to find new treasures just lurking below the surface of our Western way of thinking. It's a whole new world.
Well, but, you keep saying new, but this is old stuff. It's always been there. And that's maybe the most intriguing part of it to me. It's always right in front of my face there. I'd read the Bible, and I would not see this until you, in my case, you helped expose me to it. It's got to be an encouragement to you to see all these new books coming out on biblical context.
It is, and we can pick that theme up in a moment here. There's pluses and minuses associated with that. But when you say it's right in front of your eyes, yes. But most of it's in the white spaces between the lines.
True.
So you see it, but you don't see it. And that's what someone has to expose you to, or orient you to, or change the grids and filters that you look at God's word through, to start to be able to see what the biblical writers just assumed you knew when they wrote their scroll. And that's what we call biblical context, and that's what's in the white spaces between the lines.
But you see, we're taught not to question the Bible. You just read it. That's what it says. That's what it means to you today. It was meant for you today. And it turns out there's so much more there. It pays to question the Bible. That I'm not saying doubt, but ask questions of it.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, remember Columbo?
I do. Yeah, Peter
Falk.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, can I ask you one more question?
Mm-hmm.
wait a minute, I got another question. Actually, we need to learn to question the passage, not in a doubting sense, but in a what does that mean sense. What does that name mean? What does this site mean? What happened before at this site?
Why is he telling me this?
Exactly. What does he assume I know when he mentions Passover or those kinds of things? And that's what biblical context does. It fills in the white spaces between the lines. And, you know, when we get into such passages as the parables of Jesus, like 80 to 90% of the meaning is in the white spaces between the lines. They're totally culturally bound, if you will. And the biblical writers just assume that those they wrote to knew what they knew, understood what they understood, and they have no need to repeat it. They have no need to point it out. They just figured out.
Well, we tend to assume they wrote for us. They wrote for their contemporaries.
Exactly. Who happened to be Jewish, by and large, except for Paul, right? Mm-hmm. Who happened to be in the Near East, who 90% of them lived in a village. And all of that is so contra to the world that we live in. We're Greek. We're pretty much urban people. We're technologically driven people. We have no understanding of agrarian issues. And that's the world that we have to bridge. We have to unplug this world we live in, and we have to engage the world of the Bible. And then all of a sudden, our one-dimensional, traditional Western understanding of a passage starts to come alive in fresh and new ways in two and three dimensions. And we say, oh my goodness, I never knew that was there. This is getting to be exciting.
You know, there's another aspect of this that you addressed at last year's conference via video. Now, Doug wasn't able to be there in person, but we had a series of teaching videos as an integral part of that conference. And you had one on the green and the tan, because our tendency is to be satisfied with what we get from the Bible and when we don't know what we're missing there. And the point, and correct me if I'm wrong, the point is that we have life so easy over here by comparison. We need to understand that we're spiritually in the tan, that is, in the desert, in the deprived or the more desperate areas of the world. Spiritually, we need to have that feeling in order to prompt us to dig deeper.
Yeah, and it's like a lot of things. You have to have it helps to have the experience. And if you're going to change your paradigm, your way of thinking, if you've never been exposed to something, how would you ever know it's there? You know, until you try to go bowling, you have no idea what bowling is about. Mm-hmm. Until you pick up a tennis racket and try to hit a ball for the very first time and try to play tennis, you have no idea what the reality of tennis is really about. Now, you'd like to think that our pews and our pulpits would work together on this, and that the pulpits would be trained to open up this world for the people in the pew, to help get them to have that initial experience, to help ignite their excitement. But when you look across the landscape of seminary land, you find very, very few seminaries really paying attention to this, although I suspect most of them would say they do. But when they say, yeah, we believe in biblical context, what they really are talking about is Greek and Hebrew word meanings. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about Old Testament history and a little bit of Judaica, you know, feast and festivals of the Jews. But a lot of the other pieces of geology and proximity and topography and rainfall and trade routes and all that kind of thing is just missed. And that's all part of the fabric, the contextual fabric that needs to be woven back together to provide a three-dimensional experience of engaging a text in a passage.
Well, in just about a couple of weeks, there's going to be an opportunity for lots of folks, probably between 300 and 400 people, are going to be gathering in Zeeland, Michigan for the Institute of Biblical Context 3rd Annual National Conference. And Doug, this year is going to be there along with Brad Gray and Randy Smith and other teachers that have gotten together to form a faculty, each of whom has a passion for biblical context. And what what a great thing this is going to be. I'm getting excited now to hop on that airplane and head up to Michigan. You are still polishing off the presentations, are you not?
I am. And I must say, I've learned again, you know, for the umpteenth time, that there is no bottom to these passages. Mm. You think you're going to polish them up, and all of a sudden you just discover something that you didn't even see before over the last 10 years, and suddenly that passage gets richer and deeper and wider. Let me give you an example. It was sort of decided that I would focus as one of my 9 presentations on the restoration of Peter at the end of John, the last chapter in John. And so that caused me to go back and review the reason for his restoration, which was the 3 denials of Jesus on Thursday night. Well, I'm reading in Mark, and I see, and I have to say for the first time, that when it came time to the 3rd denial, Peter gives an oath, calls an oath upon himself, that that what I've said is true, okay? Mm-hmm. So that caused me to go back and to try to figure out, what is this oath all about? Well, when somebody wanted to really make the point that they were speaking truth, they would invoke an oath to God that would say, may the wrath of God come down upon me if I have lied. Mm-hmm. If I have misrepresented this. Now think about that. Mm. Peter has said, with his 3rd denial, and if I'm wrong, may the wrath of God come down upon me. Well, who was he denying? The person who's been designated by God to absorb his infinite wrath. And the fact that Jesus absorbed the infinite wrath of God on the cross means that the wrath of God is not going to come down on Simon Peter. Now, that does a couple of things. When he heard, some would say, the rooster crow, I much prefer the understanding of cockcrow, the sound that's emitted from the shofar horn into about 6 in the morning, indicating that temple gates are now open and worship can commence. He is reminded that the wrath of God is now going to come down upon him because that's the oath he invoked. I mean, how would that feel? What kind of horror would that cause to just flood your soul? All right, so freeze that thought. Now we go to John 21 and the restoration of Peter. And the guys are out there fishing at night again, just like the very first time that Jesus called them in Luke 5. And they caught nothing, which is exactly what happened in Luke 5. The whole thing is a remez, a hearkening back to their call. And they don't recognize Jesus on the beach. And Jesus said, hey guys, did you catch anything? They said, no. And he said, well, put your nets over on the other side of the boat. And so they submit to that authority, and they have this great catch of fish, 153. Come back to that in a minute here. Mm-hmm. And then Simon figures out that it's Jesus, Yeshua. And as the boat gets closer to shore, he jumps out and starts running towards shore. Why? Because he sees a bonfire, small fire, on the beach. It's a gravel beach. And by the way, I got to do a segue here too. I got segues coming in from all over the place. I'm going to show 2 pictures at this point of the beach. You know, we think of beach as grains of sand. But the beach around the Sea of Galilee is either pebbles or rocks. Almost no sand at all. Okay. Well, what is Simon Peter's name? Simon means pebble, and Peter means rock. I got some gorgeous pictures of the seashore showing the pebbles in the rocks. I mean, the setting is just incredulous.
And we should remind people who maybe are not acquainted with this part of John. This is after the resurrection.
It is.
Yeah.
And so Jesus has got this fire going, and he's making breakfast for these guys. And Simon Peter is the first one coming ashore. Now, what Jesus is invoking here is known as a meal covenant. It's a meal that's taken between two people that signifies we are totally one another. Everything is forgiven. And we are at shalom. Okay? So here is Simon Peter, who's absolutely blown it, who's taken this oath, which he never should have. Jesus has already absorbed the total wrath of God, so it does not need to be invoked against Simon here. Simon knows that. And the very nature of breakfast under the fire, over the fire, on the beach, communicates to him, I am forgiven. Despite what I have done, I am at peace now with Jesus. I mean, it's just rich.
Well, that kind of explains his eagerness to reach the beach, too. I can imagine what was going through his mind, because he would have recognized that.
Absolutely. That would have been in neon letters blinking 10 foot tall. Hmm. You are forgiven. All is well. Come and share a meal covenant with me. Well, I've never taught it that way before, and I will teach it that way for the first time in this conference. It just points out again that I don't care how long you've been in these passages and studying biblical context, other things just keep showing up.
Well, it's a great example of what context does. Again, we knew, most of us have read that many times, and we knew he was not recognized. We knew he had a fire and he had a fish, and but the rest of that now coming together like a big jigsaw puzzle instantly. When you realize the significance of a simple meal on the beach.
I know, and I think I mentioned it last week, but I'll repeat it again here momentarily, is the other thing I was studying was Judas and Jesus and the armed guards and entourage that were taken to Gethsemane when Jesus was betrayed by Judas. When Judas says, Rabbi, as his opening salutation, and Jesus responds with, friend, do what you came here to do. And I've never really focused on that word friend before. And I think I talked in prior broadcasts about the Roman understanding of friend when a slave has been put free by his master. And they have a new client-patron relationship. And in that new relationship, the slave is known as the friend. And the purpose of the friend is to extol the praises of his former master, who's now his new patron in the marketplace. The word friend communicates one who sings the praises of his ex-master in the marketplace. And just the irony of that word as Jesus is being betrayed by him, and Judas in part is hearing, don't you know your role is to praise me in the marketplace, and you're peddling deceit, all wrapped up in that little word friend.
So it was irony, intense irony between
them. Oh, it's dripping with irony. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, so lots of things keep showing up. So a conference like this just gets bigger and bigger. Fortunately, we still only have 3 days. So
yeah, it is 3 days. I remember at the beginning of the planning for this, because you originally had entitled this, the theme was The Last 40 Days of Jesus. And after a couple of weeks of kicking that around, you told me, we can't possibly cover in 3 days the last 40 days of Jesus. So the title has become The Last Days of Jesus, and discovering more of the story. And for people who would like to know more about it, maybe look at the agenda, the faculty, and so forth. Are there still seats available? I should ask that.
There's about 85 seats left.
Okay.
And just to point out there that you just never know what's going to show up on these passages. And even though we've reduced the title from the last 40 days of Jesus to the last days of Jesus, we still got 8 gallons of material for a 5-gallon pail.
Well, you can link to the Institute of Biblical Context website from our side. If you're listening on BrokenRoadRadio.com today, you'll see Last Days of Jesus to the right of the homepage there. If you click on that, it'll take you to the registration page, and there you can see the actual agenda going on, the subject and the presentations that will be included, and you can decide whether or not to attend. But there's still time to get your air travel together or drive over. How are you getting there? You normally drive there because that's your home stomping grounds, isn't it, Michigan?
Well, it is, and I've got lots of inventory, lots of books and DVDs and CDs and other kinds of contextual resources to bring, so it's best that I drive with a full car worth of stuff.
You've got there'll be some interesting vendors there. I imagine that Bible Places will be there as well, huh?
They will, and this year Lois Terberg is going to be there as well. She's published, I think, 3 books with Zondervan now on aspects of the Hebrew context of the life of Jesus. It's really great stuff, and she's going to have a resource table there as well.
Tell us about the faculty. You've got some new faces this year.
We do. They're new, but they all have the common denominator. They've all been or lived in Israel. They all take study group tours to Israel. And this year we have 3 of the old guard, which is myself and Brad and Randy Smith. And we're going to be joined by Brad Nelson from Florida and husband and wife team, Rod and Libby Van Solkema, who have an ancient roots tour ministry study program to Israel. They're also pastors and director of Christian ministries together in a church in Grand Rapids called Crossroads. And the 6 of us, along with Stacy Post, who will be our music director, comprise our faculty of 7 this year.
The conference is June 10th, 11th, and 12th, so time is short. If you'd like to come, there's still a few seats available. You can click and link in and make your arrangements right online, or you can go to Preserving Bible Times to Doug's website. That's preservingbibletimes.org. And you can also link to that from brokenroadradio.com. So look into it and see what you think. We'd love to see you there. Yeah.
Let me just make one final observation here. The reason I've been thinking about something like this for 10 years and why it finally came to be with Brad Gray's help is I realized a long time ago, you never want to listen to just one person when it comes to biblical context, because you get just their style, their experience level, their spiritual gifts being expressed, their personality being expressed. It's like listening to monaural music. And that's why stereo is a whole lot better, because you get a broader perspective. And that's why Bose surround sound is even better than that. This is Bose surround sound of biblical context. There's nowhere else in the world you can get this, you can find this, you can hear this. And it's just a hoot, and I mean that in the most positive sense of the word, to hear other people open up passages from their personality perspective, from their experience base, from the gifts that they have been entrusted with. And it's just a musical experience equivalent of biblical context, like listening to a world-class orchestra.
Well, surround sound, and Doug Greenwald is the subwoofer. So you hear them all there at the conference in Zeeland, Michigan, coming up. And I urge you to consider coming. We would love to meet with you there. Dave and I will be there as well. And it's a reminder that to really dig into context and understand what the Bible has to say to you takes work, takes time. Casual reading, a quick glance, and pondering doesn't always do it. So this idea that you can get into one location in Zeeland and hear from 5-6 different people who are expert in this, it's a real blessing. We look forward to that. Doug, we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Thanks, Jim, and I'm glad I'm a woofer and not a tweeter.
Doug Greenwald, Senior Teaching Fellow and Executive Director of Preserving Bible Time. Doug, we'll talk to you in a week, okay?
Okay, thanks, guys.
Take
shalom,
care.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom, Doug.
Shalom, Doug.